And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always glad when you can join us. This task force is open to the public, and your comments are welcome in Zoom chat throughout the meeting or during the public comment period that will be held around 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, please let us know if you are here, and I'll begin with our co-chairs. Hans Bootendijk.
Good morning.
Ellie Spira.
Morning.
Pooja Babra.
Good morning.
Chris Blackley.
Good morning.
Dyla Blend. David Butler. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Raj Gavarti.
Good morning.
Sanjeev Tandon.
Good morning.
And Gurgis.
Present.
Amar Kalan. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Meg Marshall. Anna McAllister. Devin McGraw.
Good morning.
Ethan Mehta. Justin Neal.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira. Naresh Sundararajan. Scott Robertson.
Good morning.
Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Phil Sutherland. Christian Tagus.
Present.
Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
And Afton Wagner is not able to join us today. So thank you, everybody. And now please join me in welcoming Hans and Shelley for their opening remarks.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome again to another week of Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force. We're so glad you're able to join us, and I'll let Hans make his comment.
Good morning, everybody. Appreciate it. We keep on moving forward today, building on the discussions that we had last week. So looking forward to that, see where we can get a few more of our recommendations teased out from our conversations. Also welcome to the public today. General reminder, we use the chat a lot. If you go to the meeting notes, it's always good to go back to actually the chat that's listed in there as well. And anybody can participate in that, also anybody from the public. So take advantage of that, but you will not be able to speak until public comments. But as we've seen in the past, we can have some very rich discussion on the chat as well. So take advantage of that. And then we are going to look at today at a number of different topics. We don't have a speaker today, as you noticed on the agenda. But we're going to work our way through the different aspects. We're starting with task 2C, pass it to Shelley in a moment, and then we're going to go back to task 2B and 2C to see whether we have more recommendations and continue the conversation aiming for recommendations. So that's our goal for today. And with that, I'm going to pass it to Shelley to go back to our overall chart and what we're trying to do today specifically for 2C.
Thank you, Hans. So what we're going to be doing today is focusing on 2C, which is what technology gaps exist for pharmacists to participate in value-based care. As Hans said, we don't have any presenters today, so we will be working off of the spreadsheet first. And as Hans will go through 2B and 2C discussions and try to capture as much as we can into the spreadsheet. Just a reminder to the task force members, it is your responsibility to enter recommendations into the spreadsheet. If you haven't looked at it, please do so. If you have a problem in accessing it, please send an email to Mike Berry and or the Excel team, Maggie or others, or Tricia Lee. So we are on task 2, which is identifying opportunities and recommendations to improve interoperability between pharmacy constituents. many of them for pharmacy-based clinical services and care coordination. So just a reminder, 2B is which priority pharmacy-based clinical use cases should ONC focus on in the short term and long term. But really what we're focusing on is 2C, which is what technology gaps exist for pharmacists to participate in value-based care. So you go to the next slide. So we need to start our discussion with the spreadsheet. So if you could pull up the spreadsheet. Just to remind us, and keep in mind that we're discussing value-based care, and what is important for pharmacy to participate in value-based care, or what are some of the gaps that are existing. As we have heard from CMS, there is a plan to for the Medicare patients to move to Medicare Advantage and value-based care by 2030. That is a target, not set in stone, but we can see where things are going. Pharmacy plays a very important role in value-based care. There are many aspects. Every patient that is a high-risk patient is on at least one of medications and usually more. And therefore, what pharmacists do in clinical services related to value-based care has the ability to capture that information and working towards sharing that information in an interoperable way with the care team. For those of you who have been involved in value-based care team approach is an extremely important concept under value-based care. And so at this time, we can open up the discussion. Tons, is there anything you want to add?
No, not at this point. I'm curious what some of the thoughts and suggestions are around that. And we probably are going to go back and forth between 2C and 2B, unlikely 2A as well as we go. But curious what some of the reactions, whether somebody wants to, and I already see Pooja has her hand raised, and then Stephen and Devin right after that. So,
Yeah, I'm happy to kind of kick off the discussion. And I think a lot of the things we've been talking about already play into value-based care. So if I think about what the pharmacists would need, they would obviously, you know, from a contracting standpoint, you know, physicians would be contracting with the pharmacist. But I think it goes back to our discussion of what's the clinical information that they need to be able to access to participate in value-based contracts, and then also how do they capture the information to be sent back to a provider? And I think there's a couple different settings, at least from what I've seen, where, you know, in some cases, the pharmacist is able to access the exact same clinical record as the provider. And I think that's kind of ideal situation, right, is the pharmacist has the same information. If not, I think it goes back to, you know, how is the pharmacist able to access the patient record? And then as they're capturing information, I know we have the e-care plan that we mentioned a couple times that can do this. But I think the other thing that I would just throw out there in terms of technology, and I think I brought this up on the last call, is ADT notifications. I think, you know, as I'm starting to learn more, I know in the last call we mentioned NCPDP has a new task group that's going to be looking at this. You know, if a pharmacist could get alerted, right, that something is happening to this patient that they're contracted to be, as part of the care team, I think that's another just important thing from a technology aspect. So I think those two kind of things are on top of mind when I think about this topic.
Thank you. Stephen, you want to go next?
Yeah, thank you. I'll sort of pursue the same line of reasoning, from the PCP perspective, I think, and it's interesting because we haven't really had this discussion, you know, in the ONC context more broadly. I mean, as we've been working through USCDI, we've talked about care plans and care teams and, you know, Mark Savage has been really, you know, a great advocate there. But we haven't made a lot of progress in USCDI. And here we're talking about, you know, how can we incorporate pharmacists as providers into this process that we're still sort of trying to figure out for, you know, physicians and other sorts of providers. I think part of it is clearly to exchange data and maintain and utilize data about the care team, you know, who is on the care team, you know, both the professional care team and the perhaps the lay, you know, family support care, part of the care team. You know, we have ADT alerts, but there are obviously other kinds of alerts that can be really relevant. I think one in particular, if a pharmacist is providing care, you know, to a patient that's involved in a value-based care arrangement, you know, the other appropriate members of the care team should be alerted to that, you know, and that's not an admission, discharge, or a transfer, you know, but it is a care event that especially until everyone is more accustomed to the idea of pharmacists as active members of the care team, that kind of alerting is going to be particularly important. And I know the care plan is the other thing, which again, some discussion, not a lot of dramatic movement forward on that. I know that the pharmacy group under Shelley's leadership and others has done a tremendous amount of work on a pharmacist's care plan. But I don't think most physicians are even aware of that. You know, physicians have done a little bit of work on their care planning, you know, more in certain settings, especially in emergency medicine, supported by specific technology and vendors. But I think, you know, if we're going to do value-based care as a team in a coordinated manner, you know, sharing and maintaining data on the care team and the care plan is going to be important. And it seems like pharmacists, if anything, are more ready to do that than a lot of physicians are. Thank you.
And Stephen, just as a follow-up question there, do you see that this is more a standards issue, a technology issue, an adoption issue? What would be the part to help move us forward in that space to make this happen?
Well, I think you hit on, you know, three key issues, and I think they all exist simultaneously. We need to have standards, you know, that are adopted. We need to have policies that say that this data is included in a version of USCDI and must be exchanged if collected, you know, and we certainly need to have, you know, pilots or support for implementations of this so that we can really see it functioning in real life. And of course, when we're talking about value-based care, we're also talking about payers being a part of the dialogue, right? So payers, providers of all different stripes, including pharmacists and physicians, being aware, and of course, patients, right? We always leave them to the end, but they should also have access to their care team and their care plan information.
Thank you. Devin.
Yeah, I think my comment, I think, follows on from some that have just been made. It seems to me that some of the technical and standards recommendations that we've made in other contexts would be equally as applicable here. And I'm not sure that there are additional technical recommendations we need to make for this particular use case. But it did occur to me, I was trying to crack into the homework with some thoughts, that most of these questions that either we've been asked or that we've come up with, I can't remember who generated them, are focused more on the technical and standards components of this and a lot less on sort of policy and business barriers, which have been coming up from some of our you know, folks who have given us commentary and folks who have weighed in on the chat, things like contractual barriers, you know, perceptions of pharmacists as not being, you know, sort of providers and therefore sort of eligible under HIPAA, for example, as being part of, you know, treatment sharing, you know, lots of these obstacles that that if we don't tackle them, frankly, no matter what we do on the standards and technical side, we still won't get the kind of pharmacy data interoperability that we need. So it's kind of an overarching plea to see where can we slot in some of these recommendations around, you know, sort of data hurdles that are not technical, but are more policy, contract, business obstacles. And then I guess, and I'm wondering whether we have any PBM expertise on the group that I'm not aware of, or whether we could bring in some PBMs who'd be willing to tell us exactly what's going on, because we have repeatedly heard from some of our commenters and some of the members of our work group that's kind of where some of the contractual obstacles to getting data to move are. So
thank you. I think that's a good point to see whether we were reaching out. Well, didn't have somebody yet, but if anybody has particular suggestions, will be great. Then we can reach out and get somebody on into the meetings as well. And as far as where can we bring it up, where can we find a slot? Either to be, to see, wherever you feel it best connects. But like in to be, we were talking about some of the foundational topics. We were talking about is it short term, is it long term? Where we should be able to, where you have them, identify this is a clear barrier and ONC can do X, Y, Z to help. Right. So don't hesitate to put it in any of the existing places at this point in time in the spreadsheet where it makes sense.
Okay. I tried to shoehorn it in on in a topic two recommendation where okay. I could.
Try to put it wherever, and if it's a mark of, well, maybe not the right slot, just add it as well.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Early on. Shelley.
Yes. I think if we're talking about value-based care from a technology standpoint, we really need to link it into quality measures. And this is most of the quality measures for value-based care are on the health plan side, which isn't really not necessarily the PBM side. The PBMs have been focused primarily on the reduction of cost, not necessarily the improvement of care. And so the pharmacy profession has really focused on working directly with health plans and trying to integrate the quality measures that others of the care team are focused on. And this requires technology to do that. As you're capturing, there needs to be knowledge of the technology that's needed for electronic clinical quality measures and digital quality measures. We need to be able to work closely on the coding that the care team is and the ACOs or MCOs that are building value. And so that becomes one of the bigger technology issues, is not only sharing what pharmacists can capture in exports like the pharmacist's electronic care plan, but also codifying that information in a way that brings value back to those payers of the health plans. So although I understand the interest in bringing the PBMs into place, but we've handled most of the technology aspects with the PBMs on the claims. I'd be more interested in hearing from the health systems and the health plans of how we can integrate pharmacists that might not be embedded in the health plan, but are providing services to rural areas or underserved areas where pharmacists are able to have an impact for those patients within health systems.
Great points, Shelley, and curious, and others might have some thoughts on that as well as we go through. One of the challenges that we are seeing with the quality measures around ACOs and how they need to be reported, where they need to come across multiple providers that are participating together, different systems, different legal entities, et cetera, it's very hard to do that. And that sounds like some similarities of either lessons learned or working at the problems together on how to solve that cross-organizational quality measurement reporting or analysis seems to be a hard nut to crack still at this point in time. So I'm curious from you or others along the discussion, what are some of the things we can do there? Because it's an issue we're already in, not even talking about pharmacists, and not to diminish it in that way, but it is just a challenge of cross-organizational reporting.
And that's right. And that's why as pharmacists, we focused on some of the disease states that and some of the social issues like social determinants of health, such as diabetes management, hypertension management, looking at the focuses where health plans have really been interested in sharing the type of information, what pharmacists can intervene on, and showing value back to these value-based models that are being built within MCOs, ACOs, and others.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, thank you. Got, I guess, three or four different points. One, I think from a language perspective, if we talk about data or content standards as one kind of bucket as to what data needs to exist and be exchanged with whom, or what data needs to be exchanged, looking at exchange requirements as a bucket that addresses kind of what needs to be exchanged with whom. In other words, not talking about the formatting, but what data is of value to whom, for what purpose, are two vital components. From a technology gap perspective, one of the things that I think that would be very useful is technology support to help address minimum necessary requirements to help pharmacists get access to the data that they need without getting overwhelmed in a haystack of data that makes it difficult to find what they need. We've heard numerous stories over long years of physicians being able to have access to a bunch of data, but challenges in finding the data that they actually need to accomplish the task at hand. So I am kind of curious about whether we could make some technology recommendations to help filter that so that pharmacists have an easier time accessing the data that they need to do the activity in front of them. I don't have the expertise on this one, but I am curious about the relationship between PBMs and medical insurance in terms of the coordination of services, not just between physicians and pharmacists, but on the payer side of the equation, as to how that actually would get coordinated and then transferred into value-based care decisions between the physician and the pharmacy. I'm not looking for an answer here and now, but I think that's part of the puzzle as well that technology may help resolve or at least address.
Thank you. Regarding some of the comments that you made, if you already want to put a placeholder of a suggestion that maybe with some others we can further work out, by all means, put that in, even though it might not be in some areas as detailed out as we need to get to. So at least then we can keep track of it that way.
Thank you.
Let's see. Anna, your turn.
Hey there. I'm really kind of struggling to get my head around exactly what we mean in this context in terms of pharmacies participating in value-based care. And I say this as somebody who takes 15 different medications and has been on NQF and now whatever the Mattel thing is called, quality measure committees for 13 years at this point. I don't understand how pharmacists, and I mean, I'm also familiar with some of the case studies like where pharmacists play a critical role in managing patients with type 2 diabetes. That is not my reality. I mean, from my perspective, pharmacies are barriers to any kind of quality of care because of the dysfunction that I live with and that, you know, I've seen my parents live with in trying to get their medications. I mean, so I'm really struggling to understand exactly what it is we're trying to solve with this in a realistic way. I mean, I can list specific examples of different bits of technology or data that could have prevented a series of barriers, but I don't understand what we mean by pharmacists being involved in value-based care, other than one of the things that most contributes to my hypertension is trying to get my hypertension medications from my pharmacy on time. I mean, it's maybe from a quality measure perspective, we should be evaluating pharmacies and or PBMs on the amount of effort it takes for patients to be able to get access to their medications, or on supply chain issues, which seems to be a euphemism for lots of things these days, even for drugs for which there's no known supply chain issue. I just don't understand how, and I'm not trying to like diss on pharmacists because they can and do have a very significant role. It's just from an experiential perspective that is rarely, if ever, been the case from my perspective. So I want to provide meaningful constructive comments about both technology as well as the role that pharmacists can play in improving care quality, but I'm really struggling with the fact that they just don't do like the basic stuff of dispensing drugs.
The question that might come up there, and I'm curious whether you might have a chance to identify some of those barriers either throughout the conversation or as a follow-up, is that which ones of these barriers, as you see them and experience them, can we chase back to if a pharmacist and a provider had more access to the same data about a patient, if the pharmacist and the quality measures of the care process overall that the care team collectively is working on, that they are represented in there more, and that we understand the overall quality of the process, where as a result the performance is, as well as some of the other ones that are paying from a pharmacy to be it a health plan, what is covered and what is not, PBMs, et cetera, having some idea where those barriers are, we might be able to translate them back into patient-specific awareness of data, as well as overall process that happens. And some thoughts around it as well, but maybe what they can help to get a sense of where might the gaps be that we can fill.
I mean, I have some specific data points, and I don't know if you want me to get into some of those things in this discussion or put it in a spreadsheet. Like, for instance, I could name a couple of different things if you're interested, but I take Concerta, which is long-acting Ritalin for ADD. I've been on it for years. It also helps with anemia, energy issues from my chronic kidney disease. And to make a long story short, I had issues accessing a drug suddenly out of nowhere. It required prior approval. And there were like all sorts of dysfunctions in terms of getting paperwork to my doctor, the doctor getting it to the PBM or health plan or whatever, the pharmacy. I mean, it's like the amount of coordination it takes is absurd. Turns out I accidentally, with traveling when I got this covered, and it didn't for some reason need to be prior approved. When I backed that out, what I realized finally, with the help of somebody from Care First, is that the health plan had decided to only cover one specific NDC code for this medication, which is a generic. Nobody knew that. My provider didn't know that. I didn't know that. The pharmacy didn't know that. And the PBM didn't know it until like they actually went into the health plan after an hour and a half on the phone with this person. They went into the health plan and like had seen where I'd gotten this medication covered kind of accidentally when I was out of state, that it was, they only covered that one NDC plan. That information was not stated anywhere for anyone to find. It was just an accidental discovery. So NDC information would be a very valuable bit of technology or data that could be communicated to everybody involved that would have facilitated a lot of care disruption on my part and hours of time and effort and stress and frustration.
Hans, this is Shelley. I'd like to address what Devin is talking about. And I think it's important to realize that the dispensing for, and pharmacy is put in the middle of this. The dispensing functions is a very technical function, and pharmacists don't have control over what the health plans or a PBM is doing in terms of how they want the benefit run. We have, through NCPDP, have built a lot of safeguards in place to try to automate that process as much as possible. But pharmacists are looked at the gatekeepers of this information, and we're not. We are dependent upon the information that we receive from the health plans, and the health plans change their formulary, sometimes on a moment's notice, based on when they have a pharmacy and therapeutics meeting and decide what their formulary is. And depending on the different health plan, whether it's an employer plan or a government plan. So we're put in the middle on this aspect. So the technical portion of dispensing is not what we should be focusing on within this task force, because we have put as much in place to help with the dispensing, including shortages and prior authorization, in many cases, real-time information, instead of waiting months for a return, because we know that access to medications are very important to our patients. What we need to be focusing on, and what, Devin, you might not understand, as pharmacists are trained, highly trained, as doctors of pharmacy, are trained to be clinicians in understanding the overall relationship to medications and the patient's body, their environment, and the other medications that they're taking. That's the clinical aspect that we're trying to document and share with our counterparts of the care team. It's unfortunate that you are receiving these problems, but in my mind, this is not necessarily a pharmacy problem, but a payer problem that the pharmacist has no control over in terms of access to certain medications to patients. We can help with those, and we do in many cases, but we are not in control of those issues.
Yeah, I have great empathy for my pharmacists, because they are on the receiving end from a lot of really frustrated patients, and they're kind of in the middle. I'm trying to think of what data and technology could do to make this work better. And, you know, it's the individual pharmacy, with a few exceptions, like the individual pharmacist. I think it's the pharmacy system. In my case, I get my stuff from Walgreens. That doesn't make any sense. Like, their distribution system seems to be somewhat mysterious. And, you know, just hope for some sort of serendipitous appearance of the medication that was ordered, supposed to arrive several days ago. But, you know, maybe the quality measures need to be placed on the PBMs or the pharmacy chains or distribution centers or something like that, because they're the ones that I see as one of the biggest barriers to quality care, because they're making it so difficult for patients to access medications that adherence is almost impossible.
And I think as we go through the conversation, these are examples where the experience, in this case of the patient, there's the experience of the pharmacist, the provider, that things don't work from their end, as expressed by Anna and others in other contexts. And I think that what we need to try to distill from this conversation is that where in the chain of information exchange and awareness do we find that there might be a gap that can help with that? And at times we have talked about, is it education? Is it awareness? Is it technology? Is it standards? Is it governance? So I think they all can help to identify some potential recommendations. So appreciate the input there. Let's move on, and we'll keep that in mind as we go through what might jump out as specific things that we can ask ONC about. So going to Christian.
Yeah, thank you, Hans. Very patient of the conversation, and Shelley covered a lot of the comments that I was interested in making, so I'll leave it at that. From the pharmacist's perspective, and this is just, you know, me sitting in my stores or a small independent operator scenarios, you know, it is all of this stuff that we're dealing with. We are in the middle. So the connectivity piece is interesting. What can we address? Well, let's put aside the concept of this kind of siloed look at quality through a payer-specific perspective and look at the situation around the quality of the pharmacy operation, which gets at how does the pharmacy handle all their patients in their database or all the patients that choose to utilize that pharmacy, assuming they're not being steered around for other interests of payer interests. So in that case, we shouldn't really even, I don't want to be absolute about this, but I think the better approach is to look at how do we recommend standards around evaluating how a pharmacy looks at all their patients and handles all their patients by disease state, by patient care interest, by care team goals, risk stratification, things like that. Standards that both data as well as policy approaches to value-based care make much more sense because in the end, while we don't live in this world now, it would be a better world if we treated all diabetics in every pharmacy the same way. The pharmacy had an approach to how they handle their diabetes. They have an approach to how they handle their hypertension approaches, just like clinical care is done in hospitals and in clinics, physicians' offices. But that doesn't exist in pharmacy because of its very technical history of dispensing the medication, which is a part of it. Just like adherence measure is a part of value. And it's unfortunately become a significant part of it, but it's a surrogate marker at best in its current implementation. And the PBMs are not designed to do the true quality look at the operations of how a pharmacist operates clinically, and in addition to integration in the care team. So to echo Shelley's earlier comments, the data pathways, the data standards should look not so much at pushing this back and forth through a PBM, but how do you do it through more care coordination, care management. And what that looks like is pharmacies probably providing maybe even a different value proposition. And what we see in our world is, as healthcare professionals, we recommend a better approach, or we take a unique approach to achieving the goal that is not as standardized perhaps, and is not even, maybe even defined by the health plan in a lot of cases, but gets the patient efficiently to that outcome. And so that to me looks more like, how do we look at a pharmacy's process operations? What does the minimum data set there look like that would be indicative of that pharmacy, one, having access to some way, either electronic or otherwise, but also then utilizing that data. So I just think that we might want to think about value-based arrangements, not only from a payer perspective, but maybe from the provider perspective to help the patient get where they need to go. And what does that build look like? Because we would probably build it differently from the pharmacy side of the equation than we would from the payer side, although both worlds have to exist. And I think we could get farther faster if we figured out how to, it's a version of grassroots, but it's basically a more standardized approach to how a pharmacy would approach it, and see if that recommendation actually changes bends the curve over time, where we've spent a lot of money over a lot of years trying to get a lot of quality to justify payment. But, you know, historically, we probably haven't moved the needle that much. So I'm more of an advocate of, let's ask the pharmacies how this might work and see what they can recommend that way.
I'm curious in that regard, Christian, looking at the chat today, comments made, looking at some of the chat that Stephen had, some of the comments that Shelley made when we started last week, Jay Galdo, about some of the measures. There is that overall theme of establishing a set of quality measures that looks at the performance, and perhaps in this context, pharmacy-specific, pharmacist as part of the care team, overall value-based care as part of the larger team. I'm wondering whether you might be able to, with a couple of others offline, to put an initial a recommendation together on what should we suggest to focus on, which areas in particular, and what would ONC's role in working with other parties to help advance that, so that that can fill in one of those foundational elements of the picture. You cannot manage what you cannot measure. Along those lines, that we need to have some insights that can then help further spur improvements all along the stack and as part of the care team as well. Would you be able to do that and start to pull that together, and maybe others to join in with that?
Yeah, I think I'm happy to assist with it. I don't know that I'll be the able to lead the thing, but thank you very much for the opportunity. Just leave it with this idea of the inefficiencies and what we see in the front line, and this is policy, payer design, and lack of patient choice or ability to put the care team together in a way that that allows the care team to work best for that patient. And it's an artifact of our design of payment, which is creating most of the inefficiencies, at least at the pharmacy level, and burdens. And so we'll continue to work to get access to data through standards design, of course, but it's really going to be this look back at, we're kind of self-inflicting a wound here. We've got to pull back from the approach a bit, or at least ease it up so we can rewire so it will work. So a lot of these things, to the earlier point that was made in my world, I will reiterate over and over again, it's the pair directional movement of patients, primarily around a product distribution function rather than a value expression of the pharmacist ability to impact the overall cost spend. So policy-wise, that has to be in place, that paradigm shift, for most of this stuff to work.
Thank you. Jim.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, I was just observing the conversation. It seems like, you know, recommendations we end up landing on ought to be grounded in well-articulated use cases for either how pharmacists participate today in value-based care, or how we think they should. Because at least in my experience, it could range anywhere from being an active part of a care team that sees patients directly frequently and adjusts medicines and coordinates through communication back with the physician care team, all the way to reviewing population data and identifying high cost patients, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems like the conversations could get all over the place unless we identify use cases. And then that'll help us determine where the policy, legal, technical communication barriers are that could lead to more cogent recommendations.
Do you have any particular ones in mind that we should, based on the conversation that we've had, that might sound like higher priority ones that we should focus on?
Well, mine are probably going to be biased from a provider standpoint, where we hunger for pharmacists who may have maybe more conveniently located with patients to be part of the care team in seeing patients in encounters. And, you know, what's missing from that is, do pharmacists have access to the medical record, to HIE, for example? Do pharmacists have an ability to communicate asynchronously with the care team? But I'm not sure if that's, you know, that's just one use case. I'd love to hear from our pharmacists what other use cases are for participation in value-based care. But my only point is that having a framework like that will help it be less abstract.
Good point. David, any comments you would like to raise?
Yes, just to add to the conversation, this is such a huge beast, the elephant, and we all see so many different sides, and it's hard to touch all of it because there are so many issues. And I had just 4 points to make that I think apply to that. Number one, we're dealing with an industry, a pharmacy, that basically, and this is an opinionated statement from me as a pharmacist, that we've spent 75 years where the pharmacy is the final packaging step for pharmaceutical manufacturers. It's get it into the bag to give to the patient, get it into the bottle to give to the patient. And for many of those decades, we were not doing anything to achieve a true counseling patient care aspect. But now all pharmacists are trained at a doctoral level. And the focus that I see as a use case is, and these next 3 points are I'm seeing as possible use cases. One is the pharmacist needs to be recognized as a revenue generator rather than the bottle being the revenue generator, the product. And this, as much as Anna was saying, that pharmacist sits behind that wall and is not accessible, because the whole focus has been to get the packages out the door, and it hasn't been fully successful at that. So a rethought of how to show what, find ways, and I view this, and I made this in my comments on the side, that of the need for some entrepreneurial aspects, a pharmacist willing to do the redesigns, and some of them have created these little counseling booths, but they still haven't put the pharmacist in them. They still have to go to those counseling areas. We need to rethink that and come up with a way to drive revenue into those counseling areas so that the pharmacist is spending all of their time in there seeing patients rather than staying behind the counter watching a team or viewing a screen. That's a significant area that needs a business focus to it. Another is, I mentioned the next point is just removing the wall, and that facility redesign is that we've got to be able to use factors that the pharmacist can bring to the patient care and become personalized in the patient care. And that's my final point. We've even had throughout many of these discussions, we say it goes to the pharmacy. We use the word pharmacy rather than the practitioner, who is the pharmacist. There has to be a rethinking of a lot of the technical aspects to realize, and even to make it truly HIPAA compliant. And I use that as the example. The pharmacist is the one who has to be HIPAA compliant, which means that pharmacist should be the one who's responsible for a specific patient, not another pharmacist, unless there are procedures, pretty much as nursing hands off from work shifts in the hospital. There have to be procedures for other pharmacists to also be able to see that patient's data, and other patients to be able to, or other pharmacy technicians to see that patient's data. We need to think about that from the HIPAA viewpoint. We need to think about that from the interoperability viewpoint. Do we send information to the pharmacy, or do we send it to a practitioner pharmacist in each of these roles? And we need to start using those terms correctly and recognizing that we're trying to talk about the pharmacist. It is never really the pharmacy that it goes to. Now, the final point in all of that is we're getting a further clouding of all of this, in that if you look at the industry, there is becoming a cloud, in the sense that these practitioner groups are now becoming more and more merged. We've got companies out there, and you can look at any one of the big chains that are out there, that are pharmacies, that are PBMs, that are health practitioners. They own medical clinics, and they are our own health insurers. So they have the health insurance side, the PBM side, the physician side, and the pharmacist side, and the PBM side, all within one corporate structure. So far, they've left in place most of the legal aspects that the states require for state boards, but there's going to be a point where they begin seeing opportunities to merge and create new revenue streams for themselves by overcoming the boundaries, and they will begin to create more of that interactivity. And we need to think about the interoperability from the viewpoint that we have still the independent practitioner, as well as the chain that is no longer, or the corporation that is no longer just one practice. It's no one sub-industry within healthcare.
Thank you. You raised a couple of interesting points there that are balancing between business cases that may need to change, and then in order to make that happen, that there is technology, standards, governance, otherwise, to help enable that. I'm curious, as part of the continuing conversation, how do we translate that from some of those things into the use cases that we can build some recommendations around? So, David, if you have a chance to drop some of those in, perhaps to be already in that progression, and that then we can build on. And it looks like value-based care is one of those use cases that evolve. I also see that before going to Pooja, that there was a comment that pointed to Shelley's statement about a use case. So when we get after Ike, I'm curious whether Shelley, you can provide more insight into that part of the chat. Pooja.
Yeah, I this has all been wonderful conversation, but I guess my concern is we're getting outside, I think, the scope of ONC and the technology gaps. I mean, we've talked a lot about business models, contracts, all of that, which is all definitely important. But I think we need to be thinking in terms of, you know, what do we have in place today and what can we do from a technology standpoint? So two things I wanted to mention. NCPDP has a strategic initiative. They've been running around value-based care for the past couple years. So we talked about standards. We do know there was an analysis done that talked about what specific data elements are in the standards today that could be captured within existing standards and shared back to a provider. And so I think, and I can put some of these recommendations into the spreadsheet, but I want to make sure that, you know, everyone knows there is some analysis that's been done and there are data fields, including you know, capturing blood pressure, other things that could be kind of a basis of what we start with in terms of recommendations. I think from a recommendation standpoint, though, you know, I think it comes down to potentially certification, right? Like who's being certified in order to share that information. So that's one thing. I think the other thing that has come out, and this is, I see Katie and Kim Boyd, Katie Russell and Kim Boyd commenting. There's, you know, the other piece, and I think Kim just put this in, credentialing. So, you know, pharmacist credentialing is another big piece of value-based care. So I just want to make sure, and I think, you know, everyone's been making really good points, but I think our kind of as a task force and what we're focused on, you know, let's be thinking about things that we can kind of immediately recommend, because I'm concerned we're kind of trying to boil the ocean here. Which of course is, you know, not a bad thing, but definitely want to get a little more focused, I think, in especially in our recommendations.
Thank you, Pooja, for that that point. And actually, we need to hone in on what is it that we think that ONC can do to advance there. As you were talking and some of the comments made, I put something in the chat that I'm trying to figure out. Are those some of the use cases that we seem to be talking about, and that we can organize some of the thoughts that we have? And I see another one from Jim just popping up as well. That would be great that we can anchor our comments, a lot of the conversations around standards and technology. How can each of those things advance in that space? So have a look at that. It probably is incomplete or incorrect here and there, but just to have something to look at. Ike, go ahead.
Thank you. I think a couple points. One, we need to remember that patients are at the center of this equation. And from a value-based perspective, it really needs to be the value of care to the patient and evaluating the impact of care on patients, not necessarily at the provider level, whether the provider be a pharmacy or otherwise. Yeah. And really concerned about the idea of treating every condition the same in every pharmacy and the burden that that would place on pharmacists in trying to keep up to date. I've got a really rare condition, and it's about 300 people in the country have the condition. Trying to have every pharmacist educated on my condition is a large challenge. It's a lot easier and more efficient to have some specialty services and pharmacists that have specialty knowledge going on. In that same space, to try to change a patient's relationship from having a relationship with a pharmacy to a pharmacist, again, puts a huge burden on patients in trying to potentially get things done in terms of looking at getting things dispensed and filled, looking at counseling, obviously that's a little bit of a different story. I work well with the pharmacist in my local grocery store when I have a complex question or a set of needs that goes beyond filling a particular prescription. As far as coming back to the idea of what recommendations can we make to ONC to fill in technology gaps, if there is an existing gap in pharmacists having access to patient data because they have a lack of or current lack of technology in their facilities to access and process the data, which does create, which does have costs. One potential solution is to use technology like the patient lookup system, patient unified lookup system for emergencies, PULSE, which ONC helped develop, which provides read-only access to patients' medical data via the World Wide Web for authorized users. This type of technology would help provide access to critical data for pharmacists without creating a significant immediate additional technology burden for them to have access to the data. A computer, internet connectivity, and a secure browser and an authenticated account is all that's really necessary to access that data. So that may be kind of a concrete first step rather than trying to get all the way, you know, to the next planet. We may want to start with some incremental steps that get us to the moon first, and providing some of that base level key services or access to key data might be a good first step and a good initial recommendation.
Thank you. Would you be willing to put that into one of the short term?
Well, before Ike does that, I want to address what Ike just said. The issue, what we're asking with that, and in many cases we do have areas where pharmacists can go out of their current workflow, go access some information, manually put it back into their system, which is what we call provider burden. And in order to reduce that burden, we need to have the information electronically available to our vendors so they can work it into the workflow. What we proved with the work that we did with the pharmacist electronic care plan of what Jake had talked about with the CPSN model, the Community Pharmacy Enhanced Service model, was that those pharmacists, no matter who they saw, no matter which patient they saw, they were able to document their information and their encounters with those patients in a very consistent way without leaving their own computer system and going to look for additional information. And this caused an increase in productivity, which made those services more valuable. And that's the type of model that we want to have. And what I tried to explain in the comments of what you asked me to comment on, Hans, which is dealing with the workflow. The workflow in an EHR current system that physicians use or hospitals use, which is encounter-based or problem-based, and we're looking to document the same way as a physician does, is counter to how we're trained as pharmacists to look at the entirety of all the medications that the patient is on, coming up with assessments, interventions, and outcomes that will be useful for value-based models that we don't see in the current EHR systems. Unless that pharmacist is embedded in and using their own system that integrates with an EHR, like in a health system that we see, example, the VA, or we see in other types of health systems like Kaiser or Intermountain or Cleveland Clinic, we're not going to be able to get that taken care of. When you look at pharmacists who are community pharmacists in the independent community pharmacy setting in rural and underserved areas, these pharmacists need to have access to multiple different systems to document within their own system. So what you're asking for, what Ike is saying is, well, yeah, the information, go out there and get it, whether it's with the patient, when then we have to enter it into our own system. And this causes a lot of provider burden, increase the cost and productivity of those pharmacists. We have a different workflow. We have a pharmacist patient care process workflow that is very different from other EHRs. It's very similar to in a hospital system, if you expect the surgeon to document into the internal medicine EHR portion or module, or if you ask the pharmacy in a hospital system to document in the electronic medical record, that has an entirely different workflow. So they end up doing double documentation. And this is what we're trying to prevent by having electronic access to that data.
Can I comment on that?
So I would like to reply first.
Yeah.
I would, very quickly. I was not suggesting that tools like Pulse would be the end state. It is, as I said, I thought pretty clearly, it's an initial concept or an initial tool that creates a first step that improves access to data for pharmacists that may otherwise not have a technology platform or immediate access, while additional technology tools can be developed and implemented. The Pulse tool doesn't require any additional work to be developed for that purpose. It is ready, it is actually deployed in the real world today and could be readily utilized for that purpose. Again, not as an end state, but as one tool among several to provide an incremental step approach to get to the end state that you laid out. Thanks.
And just before going to Jim, generally there is this challenge where there's no connectivity, what's a good first step? And at times leads to this so-called swivel chair integration, where you have to go from one portal to the next, where indeed the intent is to move to less and less comes together. But where that has an opportunity to at least get a starting point, and it might not be for all, but it might be something for a number of where that that could work. Jim?
Yeah, hey, thank you. And I was just going to comment because I agree with Shelley that that's in fact, in part, what ONC over the last 10 years has been trying to do for providers, right? So one EMR to another, goodness sake, that the workflow that she described the pharmacists are doing with double entry is exactly what happens across the country with providers. Somebody in a clinic down the hall using a different EMR, we have to retype all the meds and allergies, et cetera, in. So what the ONC has done is created, you know, not only content, but format standards, transport standards to allow machine understandable data to enter from EMR 1 to EMR 2. And so the EMR 2 can then use that information for decision support and reduce double entry. What I'm suggesting is a lot of those tools have been created. The HITACH task force could take use cases and determine, okay, what data would you need? What are they entering it? And then we could utilize USCDI and a lot of these other tools to create regulatory standards to help facilitate that for the pharmacy side. And it seems like that's kind of the job of the HITACH task force recommendation in this space.
And maybe to add to that, based on some of the conversations, we have identified a number of existing technologies, networks, otherwise Pulse is added to the list. Here is another alternative to that with a different set of adoption characteristics and opportunities. Part of the conversation then comes back to, yes, the technical standards are there, the technology is there, but there are other barriers, whether it's contractual, incentives, funding, governance, whatever they might be, that stand in the way of that actually happening. So I think as part of our looking at the use cases, having that multiple dimensional of our technical standards there, yes, no, they might be. If they are, what are the other areas that that could be addressed to help advance this? Given that we've already done it up to a point, we can do better, but up to a point in other areas and take advantage of that. So going back to maybe the comment that Devin also made, and we made over the last week as well with Mary Kay, forget her last name, that there are other barriers out there that we would like to understand that need to be addressed to advance that. Shelley.
Yes, and yeah, it's Barry K. Owens, by the way.
Okay, thank you.
So, to address what Jim is saying, we, through the work that we did with the pharmacist electronic prayer parent, years. So we have a good thousands of pharmacies who are utilizing the care plan to capture data in a very standard way, following how they're trained as pharmacists using the pharmacist patient care process. And we've codified that data and made sure that the care plan is following USCDI. So we've done a lot of work on a pilot level, very large pilot level, a national level, not just in one state or in one location, but nationally, where we are driving the system vendors where pharmacists are capturing. Not every pharmacy has adopted it. Some of the large retail pharmacies have not adopted it, but we do have use cases out there where it is working, where pharmacists can document in a very standard way, a highly codified way, where we can export the clinical documentation following USCDI data classes. So I think—
Well, Shelley, is that something, I mean, that sounds wonderful, because my understanding of how rulemaking often works is it's a gift, it's gold when there's pilots that are working out there and consensus is built. And the next step is that the federal government helps to, helps to take it to the next level through regulatory standards. Maybe that's one of the use cases that we select.
And Jim, you're right. This use case actually started out of an innovation grant out of North Carolina, Community Care of North Carolina, and was extremely successful, because they originally were documenting into a web-based portal that caused more problems. And that's one of the reasons why we went to the care plan to export data out that was very consistent, no matter which patient the pharmacist was seeing, and was able to document in a very consistent way.
And I'll be quiet after this. I'm just responding to her, Hans. To me, it seems like our suggestions earlier about grounding this in use cases, because that lets us develop standards, implementation guides, et cetera, lets LNC develop them. That's a great example of what she just described could be a use case, and the gift of there having been a pilot where people have worked on standards could be a wonderful starting place.
And perhaps on that, on how to organize that, we currently have 2A, 2B, 2C that we went through. We haven't gone to 2D yet. I'll do that next week. But it sounds like that the sequence in which we're trying to put the recommendations together is actually start with a combination of 2B and 2C, particular use cases on what we are trying to address in the direct communication between pharmacist and provider or payer or otherwise, in the context of a care team, in the context of a value-based care, measures around that. And then within that, how can ONC facilitate that? Each of these use cases has a standards, a technology, a governance, incentive, other types of components to that to make that work. Some are already in place, other ones need to be addressed to make it really fully work. It sounds like that we might want to switch it that direction and organize accordingly, so that if we look at the spreadsheet, is that we start with the use cases, we identify within those what can be done short-term, long-term, aspects can be addressed with network-based exchange queries or otherwise. We organize it a little bit more that way to where we can, or that we say, no, regardless of the use case, this is a foundational topic. This needs to happen across the board, no matter what we do. Would that type of an organization of how we are starting to talk about help then as we progress further to put more specific recommendations in play?
I think so, Hans, but one question is, ONC had the authority with CMS to actually compel providers and incentivize them to actually adopt certified technology. How do we answer that same question on the pharmacy side? Are there levers? I mean, would it just be developing standards that we hope people adhere to? consensus-based, or is there an opportunity to actually incentivize use of those standards?
Good question as to what are the parties that beyond ONC we need to include or reference that needs to be collaborated with to make those advances. Various ideas might exist. I'll go to Shelley. Maybe she has, or others have ideas around that.
Yes, and Jim, to answer your question in relationship to the pilot we did with the care plan that's still ongoing and very successful, as you heard Jake talk about, a million care plans a quarter just out of the CPSN network, which is just one network out of 3,500 pharmacies across the United States. So that's a very viable model. We've approached ONC in the past, and maybe one of the reasons why they formed this task force was we were having problems in getting our care plan counterpart, care team counterparts to accept our care plan and to utilize the data. So it's difficult when your counterparts who already have certified EHRs are not willing to accept a fire-based care plan because they don't know what to do with it other than printing it off in or creating a PDF and throwing in a file somewhere that doesn't fit into the care team's workflow. And so
it's interesting
because, the problems because, that we're facing as barriers to some of these models.
Well, that's why I say, you know, maybe step A, we'd take the use cases, but then we divide it up into atomic, you know, capabilities. Like one is access to information, right? Another might be communication back to other EMRs. Another might be bulk part, you know, we could begin to separate it out so that we don't get bogged down. For example, FHIR may help us. It may be that many of the EMRs don't want a big care plan in them, right? Like some urgent care EMR, right? But they might, in any given encounter, want to know that there is a care plan and hit it. FHIR, facilitated or brokered FHIR, would allow that EMR to access that care plan without necessarily having you stuff the whole care plan in every urgent care EMR the patient's seen. You see what I'm saying?
This is exactly why we're starting a new FHIR-based implementation guide for what we call a standardized medication profile, which is used for transitions of care that has a smaller subset of data that would fit into what NCPDP is trying to do with the ADT. That once we know that a patient has a admission, discharge, and transfer information, that the actual documentation of information, including multiple medication lists, so that medication reconciliation can occur, but other information that's medication related. We already have a project underway within HL7 and NCPDP. We're in the process of creating the implementation guide that would go through a connectathon, we're hoping in January 2024, and then also continue with a ballot in May of 2024 so that we can begin to exchange medication-related information during transitions of care that hopefully will drive this process.
And maybe just a comment there, and I'll go to Pooja. There's an analogy that at times I'm using is that it takes two to tango. And that means is that when we talk interoperability in particular, we have at least two sides of the coin that we need to work with. The question I think that Jim raised has still relevancy. There are things that currently in the scope of what HIT is done, what could be put into certification, what could be put in USCDI, et cetera, where ONC has direct opportunity. And the interesting part of the relationship with CMS is that the adoption of certified technology is where CMS, through payment programs, has the opportunity to incent and encourage the adoption of what was built. Oh, still friction between what is needed, what's not, can everybody do it, should USCDI be supported by everybody, et cetera, but there is that mechanism. That question is also relevant if you look at the pharmacy aspect. What is that other party that can provide the appropriate levers, incentives, funding, whatever it might be, to enable everybody to advance so that both sides of the equation, if you just look at provider and pharmacy and pharmacists that we have the opportunity to advance it. If we only are going to look at what currently ONC is focusing on and able to move forward, we would not quite as easily get to the community and commercial pharmacists. So what is that? What are those organizations? Where are those that can enable us to advance the ball? Because we only go so far at times with industry momentum. Sometimes there is indeed a need for some regulations to help move that along. But what would that be? I don't know what the answer is to that, but if we only focus on one side of the equation, we typically end up building something and nobody will come, or not enough. Kuja.
Yeah, this is more a procedural question, to be honest with you. I think, you know, it's sounding like we're landing on use cases. I'm assuming, though, we still want to go and fill in the spreadsheet on recommendations. Are we thinking, yeah, the use cases will kind of come up as another tab, or maybe you don't even know this yet, but I'm assuming we can still just keep moving forward with the spreadsheet as is. Yeah, and
absolutely. Fill in the spreadsheet. What I suspect may happen, but we need to talk through that, is that based on the conversation, we may want to organize, as we did in the topic one, we may organize the tab a little bit differently, that we can identify what these main use cases are, and then within each one of those, the different aspects, and then foundational topics above. That might be a way to organize, but we need to play with that a little bit to see how that conversation went, and or whether we just stick with this organization, in which case you still can enter the recommendations as, are they a use case to add, or are they a technology or a standard or something else to add as a recommendation? So the questions remain the same. The way we organize it might just flow a little different. Does that work, Pooja, or?
Oh, sorry, I went back on mute. Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Yep. So until we have figured it out to stay with it as is or adjust the format a little bit, please add any recommendations in to B, where they are general use cases, clinical use cases, in to C, when they are specific to the value-based care aspects that are above and beyond that, if you will. But in a sense, that's another use case with multiple aspects to it. And a question to A so far is that where can ONC facilitate adoption of standards and support data for pharmacy-based clinical services that really, for some of those use cases, if not all, are going to be underpinnings to make them happen. We are with about 3 minutes up to the public comment period of time, and we have been able to have this discussion and conversation without having to look at time, agenda topics to change or whatnot, which has been great. But now we suddenly ended up in a little bit of a lull of 2 minutes spare before we go to public comment. Are there any other thoughts right now, or would it be good that we go to public comment? There might be, based on the chat, some on the line who would like to make some further suggestions or comments as part of that. We can go there, and then we will wrap up after that with any remaining thoughts and next steps. Any final thoughts before we pass it back to Mike for a public comment? Not final, but okay, Mike, then I think we're passing to you for public comment, and then we'll go back after that with any additional thoughts that might have come up from that as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks, Hans. As Hans said, we're going to open up our meeting for public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be just on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause just for a moment to see if any members of the public want to raise their hand. Not seeing hands raised, so I'll turn it back to you, Hans.
All right, thank you. Well, in that case, we have another 9 or 10 minutes to continue the conversation. Are there any other thoughts that we have related to today's 2C topic, where we particularly focused on value-based care? Any additional thoughts to add to the discussion? anything related to B as well, any use cases. We have from the chat, we have quite a few that we can blend together, whether it's a list of about 3 or 4 or 8 or 9, we need to work through that. Any additional ones that have not been raised that you would wanted to clarify? And anything around 2A? Okay, I'll take quiet as not at the moment. Maybe Shelley, before we start to close out the meeting, maybe one more comment then on topic one, on progress made, and that we're still looking for suggestions there as well.
Let's go back to the spreadsheet if we can for the last 10 minutes.
You want to go to topic two or topic one?
Well, I'll leave that up to you on where you think you've been following this closer than I have. So I'll leave it up to you where you think we need some efforts.
On topic two, from the chat, we know that Devin has some thoughts. David was going to add some. We have a couple of Ike was going to add some. So we have some notes there on starting points for recommendations. But I think we also have for you, Tricia Lee, myself, that we want to, based on the conversation, look at, is there a better way to organize it to further put everything in context and then pull it together? So I think that's where we sit on topic two. And on topic one, we know that we have a number of subgroups that are in progress. If you haven't met yet, please do so and provide your suggestions as updates. If you have, then they should be there on tab one. And next week, we would go to D, if I'm not mistaken. And at which point in time, we want to make sure that we have any of the suggestions that you've made and that you would like to forward as a recommendation, even as a draft. Please put that in the tab, topic two recommendations. That can help us further organize and focus the discussion next week. So Shelley, do you have any other comments or anybody on the line?
Well, I think that I just want to make it clear in terms of what Dee says, which is addressing drug inventory transparency, prescribers and consumers, which is a lot what Anna had talked about earlier. Again, please realize that pharmacies' hands are tied in many cases to this issue. So I think some of these recommendations might have to go to the health plans, the MCOs, the ACOs, who are creating the situation where a prior authorization is needed. In terms of technology, we've already put in place electronic prior authorization for pharmacy that is different from a medical prior authorization. The electronic prior authorization in terms of the NCPDP standard is real time, which makes it the access to the medications a lot faster, but there's no inkling that the government has to address that, because again, most of the models that have built around medications are in relationship to reducing overall costs, not necessarily improving the care and quality of the patient's care using those medications. And this is where we see a lot of the problems that occur, that there might be a prior authorization that the pharmacy might be noticing of, but it still requires that physician or prescriber to complete the prior authorization. And we're not, in some cases, aware of what that prescriber has done or where it is in the process or the cycle of that electronic prior authorization. We see different models in the long-term and post-acute care setting where the facility is a separate from the physician or the prescriber, separate from the pharmacy, that causes another issue of this communication for electronic prior authorization and the transparency that prescribers and consumers need. That's one of the reasons why NCPDP has put out formulary and benefit And also through HL7, consolidating with real-time pharmacy and benefit information to the prescriber, so they're more aware of what that patient's benefit does cover where prior authorization is needed. So I think we've addressed a lot of these issues. I don't know if it's necessarily entirely in pharmacies court. We are a participant in these issues, but we're not the responsible problem. We're not responsible for the problems that are occurring, but we're looked at as responsible for the problems that are occurring.
We have two hands raised. We'll go to Erin and then to Ike, and then I think we are at the time at the end of the meeting. Anna.
Yeah, and I just wanted to emphasize to Shelley and everybody, I don't mean to be dissing on pharmacists. I realize my local Walgreens is at such turnover because people are so frustrated. And like they were forced to then do immunizations, but they weren't given additional staff. And I complained to Walgreens corporate, not to the pharmacists themselves. So I empathize for the issues. I do think problems rely on health plans and PBMs, and would love to see the government give more oversight there. But I put in the chat a couple of different things that I think could be basic data elements that would be helpful in at least illuminating where things are for both the pharmacist and the patient. One of my big issues has been on supply chain and access. And, you know, I order different medications, or the pharmacist orders them on my behalf, and maybe they come, maybe they don't. They say when they order them that they should be in the next day by like 4 p.m., sometimes that happens, more than often it does not. And like it goes on for days, if not weeks, and with some medications, with absolutely no insight into what the issue is. It's like, is the distributor having an issue? Is it stuck in a UPS truck somewhere on, you know, I-95? I mean, nobody has any insight. And that seems to me to be something that could be solved with data and technology, given the fact that, you know, lots of companies now use very detailed tracking of shipping and inventory. Another suggestion is that one of the great mysteries that I seem to confront every time I require a prior authorization is the doctor says that they haven't received the form from the pharmacist. The pharmacist swears they've sent it a number of times. When the doctor says they send it in, the pharmacist says they haven't received it. And, you know, likewise with the PBMs, and all of that process has to be mediated by me. And everybody is saying that they've done their thing, but they have no idea whether or not, like, whether it's the PBM or the pharmacy or whoever happens to be on whatever end of the PA process has seen the data or received it, et cetera. So person stuck in the middle of coordinating all of that is the patient. And that just is, it's difficult to articulate how burdensome and frustrating that process is, because everybody claims to have no insight into what's wrong, and they claim to have done what they need to do, but it's happening. And that feels like something that could be handled with data and technology.
We are running short of time. So thank you, Anna. We have two more comments within a minute and a half. So if you can keep it short, that would be great. And then we'll pick it up further, because 2D is also next week. Ike.
This may be a very basic question or basic problem, but I wonder if a recommendation you might make is to produce a systems model, not on the technology side first, but from a systems model. How do pharmacies and PBMs fit in to value-based care from a systems thinking perspective, and then look at that to drive where technology needs to support connectivity within the system, just to help us make sure that we've got all the players that need to be included.
Thank you, Ike. That might be in a good consideration for one of the foundational topics. I see that Jim also joined the queue. Hold on, Jim. Pusha first, and then Jim, if we still have time, because we are just about to run out.
I'll type it in the comments.
Oh, great.
Yeah, just 30 seconds on this. PA, the big problem with PAs is specialty meds. I think we've got that topic coming, but I also think it's important to bring to this group probably an understanding of price transparency as well on the pharmacy side, because I saw some questions on that. So just throwing that out to the group that we should probably do a quick what's happening with price transparency, at least on the pharmacy side, not the medical side.
Great, thank you. So next week we'll have a D on what can ONC do to address inventory transparency for prescribers and consumers, where some of these topics can come right back. So we have not completed that. And if you have in the meantime, any particular recommendations, thoughts, suggestions on anybody to invite to get more clarity and insight, please forward either into the spreadsheet or directly to Shelley, Trisha Lee, or myself, or combined to put that in the hopper. So thank you very much for today's discussion. Very lively, lots of thoughts, ideas around opportunities there, and looking forward to the continuation of that conversation next week. Shelley, you may close the meeting.
Thank you very much for attending. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
And for those who are interested, we will be presenting at the HITACH meeting tomorrow.
And that's going to be a summary of progress to date. So no final recommendations being discussed there, just progress.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.